Friends, good morning and welcome to our second Sunday of Advent. And this morning, what I want to do for our second Sunday is I want to spend the morning simply reflecting on a piece of art. And I've come across a number of different versions of this piece, but the original piece is called Mary Comforts Eve, and it's by someone named Sister Grace Remington. It's a painting imagining the meeting of two mothers of our faith, you could say, Eve and Mary. And it imagines what that moment might be like for the two of them to meet. And in the portrait, we see Mary on the right meeting with and apparently comforting what I take to be, you know, the mythical or archetypal Eve, mother of life, of the Genesis creation myth. Now again, this piece is by Sister Grace Remington, and what I love about it is that it's got so many wonderful theological big ideas on display here, right? And I love that it features Eve because Eve, of course, doesn't get a whole lot of attention mainstream or within faith besides sort of being a bit of a punching bag and sort of scapegoat for what it means to be the first sinner, you know, something like that. And so Eve doesn't get a lot of attention. I think that's a shame because I really think there's something interesting about Eve, right? I mean, Eve, of course, means mother of life. And she's obviously meant to stand, this character we meet in Scripture in Genesis. She's obviously meant to be a stand-in for humanity, the mother of life, the mother of humanity. She represents all of us, you could say. And I love this portrait because the story it tells here is the whole story of Scripture, you could say. Creation, fall, redemption, it's all captured in this piece here by Remington. And we, you could say, are, as we look at this painting, we are both Eve and Mary at once. And so the story that we see played out here, it's the story of Advent. It's the story and hope of Christmas, but it's also, of course, our story. And it's the story of grace in our lives. Now, Remington begins by sort of placing this imaginary meeting within a garden. And I love that because garden imagery in Scripture is, of course, rich and profound and telling, right? The garden in Scripture, you could say, is a place of complexity, of contrasting themes, you could say. And so we start in Genesis, right? We've got the Garden of Eden, right? It's a place of intimacy, relation, and cooperation with God. But it's also the place where the serpent lies and deceives. And that same sort of motif carries throughout Scripture, right? You've got in the Song of Solomon, right? The garden is, of course, pictured as this sort of paradise. You know, the one person says to their beloved, "You are my locked up garden, my sister. My bride, you are a spring enclosed, a sealed fountain." And the garden here is, of course, it means a garden locked up means paradise. Now, unfortunately, the garden, of course, is also a place not just of pleasure and good things, but of course of envy and negative things. And, you know, a lot of sort of dark things happen in Scripture in a garden, right? You've got in Daniel, a sexual assault is planned inside of a garden, and it ends up that the perpetrators get justice by way of execution at the end of the story. Or Naboth's vineyard, right? The story of the garden there is about murder being played out. And in Jesus' life, it was the same thing, right? The Garden of Gethsemane for Jesus is a place of divine comfort. It's a place of intimacy and prayer, but it also, with Judas, is a place of betrayal. And so by setting this up as happening within a garden, it's complicating the picture right away. There's the setting of the garden here. It's sort of reminding us that as humans, our hearts are complicated places full of different motivations, different things compelling and motivating us. And so we're immediately given this image of a garden, and it's here that Mary and Eve have their moment of meeting. And then the two, of course, meet in this garden, but under this arch. And I find this curious because in mythology, arches or doorways are understood as thresholds in time and space where we can pass into another kind of time and space. But there's something more to arches than that. The arch, you could say, is like this paradoxical image built on weakness. I mean, consider what Leonardo da Vinci wrote about his own work and the nature of arches in his work. He says this: An arch is nothing else than a strength caused by two weaknesses. For the arch in buildings is made up of two segments of a circle, and each of these segments, being in itself very weak, desires to fall. And as one withstands the downfall of the other, the two weaknesses are converted into a single strength. Two weaknesses converted into a single strength. A strength caused by two weaknesses. And boy, do I love that idea, that imagery, as we imagine these two women meeting, especially when we think of the hardships that both Eve and Mary knew for their roles in the story of faith, right? I think there's this comfort, or even a strength, you could say, in sharing our weaknesses, our wounds with one another. And when we discover someone else who shares those, it's like we've met a kindred spirit. And I love this image because these women have so much in common, even though they're separated by centuries of the faith story. But they're kindred spirits in many ways, but in my mind, primarily in two ways. And the first is this: both Eve and Mary wore the scarlet letter of shame. I mean, consider Eve, right? Unfortunately, she's often seen as this simplified character. Her only role was to basically be the first person to sin and cause somebody else to sin, right? Like, she gets loaded with that baggage. And so there's this element of shame with her, but her son also becomes the first murderer. And so there's this element, this weight of shame surrounding Eve, justified or not. I mean, I think it's really hard to sort of put all that weight on a single person, an archetype no less in scripture, but Eve carries this weight of shame, but so does Mary, right? I mean, imagine trying to tell the story that you conceived by way of immaculate conception, right? Imagine the gossip, the scandals. And you know, when we think of the story of Christmas and Mary and Joseph heading and there's no room in the inn, you know, we often conjure up images of there being no availability at the Best Western or the Holiday Inn. But it's not so much that. It's that she arrived in a town of Joseph's family and nobody had room for her. Nobody was willing to sacrifice their lodging in order to house Mary and Joseph. And you can imagine this air of shame hanging over Mary as she arrives in Bethlehem with Joseph. Just this air of, come on, that's quite the story. Just admit it. You were sleeping around. And there's this air hanging there for her, this air of shame. But what they both also share in common is this, is both Eve and Mary would know the pain of losing a child. Of course, Eve would know the pain of not only having a son who's notorious for the first murder, for doing something that seems almost forgivable, but she loses her child, Abel, in the process of it. And that deep, deep pain is only something that a few know. Only those that have lost a child know that unique pain, and Mary will eventually know that as well. You know, when Simeon prophesies over Mary, he says what? That her soul, her heart would be crushed, would be pierced as well. And that's because she would lose a child much like Eve did. Jesus would die young before she had passed. And so there's a kindred spirit there. They both know what it means to lose a child. And there's something powerful there that I think many of us know, perhaps not to the extent of the shame they both wore or the pain of losing a child. Even if we don't know those particular hardships, we all know that sort of kindred spirit, that connection that comes from connecting with others who have experienced something similar to us, whether it's a disease or cancer, losing a child, some other, you know, sort of hardship we deal with in life. There's something special about connecting with others that know that pain as well. But what I love most about this piece is when you look at it, the look, the gaze, you could say, that Mary and Eve have for each other. I mean, there is a look to both of them of a deep knowing, a deep connection. It's as if Mary is reaching back in time and saying to Eve, I know the shame and the pain you have carried with you for centuries. I know that experience myself, but I carry something inside of me that will forever remove that stain from you. And Eve is experiencing hope and grace from a brokenness she never thought she'd see an end to. And in Eve's eyes, you can see her reaching through time to all mothers and parents who have known the pain of both comfortable with having a child that has disappointed you and done something seemingly unforgivable with Cain, but also knowing the pain of having to bury a child long before their time. You know, it's as if Eve is saying to Mary, listen, Mary, parenting is one of the most beautiful adventures of a lifetime. It's to love beyond words, Mary, but to lose a child is an absolute hell. Mary, you might carry the hope of the world within you, but even that won't spare you the pain, the soul-crushing pain of losing a child before their time. And you can see it in their eyes here in this portrait. Neither of them are sort of smiling. There's a pain that they both seem to wear in this portrait. And so both Eve and Mary stand among, you could say, all the brokenhearted parents among us who have lost their children to death, maybe to despair, to shame, to addiction, to suicide even perhaps. And I think they stand as icons for every person, particularly at this time of season when it can be so hard, the memories of those that we have lost. They stand as icons for every person who has known the pain of losing someone close to them. And I don't doubt that there are some who are watching who know that pain well, whether it be a parent, a friend, God forbid, a child. But that manifestation of that pain becomes very intense this time of year. And there's something, though, about this portrait of hope, even amidst their deep pain, because Mary takes Eve's hand, right, places it on her belly. She wants Eve to feel the kicking of hope, you could say, in her womb, that while they know this pain, all is not lost. As these women embrace, it's a moment, you could say, of both solidarity and a moment of hope. But the most genius part of this whole portrait to me is of Eve still holding on to the apple, the fruit, right? She's still clutching the fruit of her mistake, her shame. She can't seem to let it go. She doesn't seem to want to let it go. And I mean, my goodness, this is genius to me. This is where the painting to me has an incredible depth of insight into the human condition. And I think where it speaks perhaps most powerfully to many of us, right? While Eve is still clutching the fruit, you could say, of her woundedness, of her mistakes, of her shame, right? Eve, in that way, is like all of us. You know, like her, I think we all have the propensity to tend to hold on to things, those sorts of things in our lives as well, right? Even when we're standing in front of the one that could heal us, we can't seem to let go, can we? It's so hard to let go of whatever that apple, that fruit is in our life, that wound, that mistake, whatever that thing is that feels like shame to us. We clutch to that, right? And I think there's something incredibly powerful about this image of Eve centuries later still holding on to her shame and her pain and her woundedness. Laura Jean has done a remarkable essay on this painting, and I love what she says about it and how this clutching of the apple speaks to her. Laura Jean says this, "I am a girl who is hyper aware of sin. I notice when I'm bad. I notice when I fall short. I feel it in my body, a dull ache that throbs or sometimes hits quickly and sharply like the really bad period cramps that we got when we were teenagers. I'm always cataloging my sins and trying to fix them with checklists and rules and to-do lists that will, hopefully, somehow be able to rip out the deep roots of sin that I can feel running through the dry dirt of my soul. I live in anxious vibration, carrying tension inside my body for every wrong step, false motive, unholy action. And here's what I see when I look at Eve. I see that oh so terribly familiar, damn it, what have I done posture. I see that exhaustion in her body. Hi, Eve, I know you. I've seen those weighed down shoulders in my mirror before." Even if we maybe don't like the word sin or hesitate to use it, I think all of us maybe know exactly what Laura Jean is saying here. This hyper awareness that we even carry within our bodies when we mess up, when we hurt someone we love, when we make that mistake that actually has consequences, when we feel shame or guilt about ourselves. I think, like Laura Jean, we've all seen Eve at times looking in the mirror ourselves. And Jean goes on to say that we, the viewer, can't help but feel achingly sad for Eve looking at this portrait because we can't help but feel achingly sad for ourselves. I think all of us know what it feels like to mess up in a way that actually feels life-altering. That relationship changed after we did that. You know what I'm talking about. We know how heavy shame can feel. We know what it's like to carry around with us our worst mistakes, carry that around with us. And at times it's like looking in the mirror and seeing what Eve looks like here. She can't look up, her shoulders slouched. We know that feeling and posture. And yet as the viewer, we look at this portrait, right? And we can't help but feel this frustration, like, Eve, let go of it already. Just put the apple down, the fruit, whatever it was, like, just let go. And it's so much easier to spot this in others, right? It's so easy to look at others in our lives and think, why can't they just let go of that? Like, why can't they just move on, right? But Eve here is a portrait of all of us. It's easy to spot in Eve or others, less so in our own selves, that wound that we just can't get past or forgive, that mistake that we just can't forgive ourselves for, whatever it is. It's like Eve, we're all in some ways clutching and holding on to our past mistakes and wounds. And in doing that, when we do recognize those things in our lives, we can be so harsh with ourselves, right? Like, come on, Brad, get it together. You should be past this already. You're better than this. You don't have to be petty and hold on to this. And yet we still struggle. And there's those harsh voices in our head constantly accusing and chastising us. But notice Mary here. She doesn't do that to Eve at all. There are no words. There's just this knowing look and a touch. Mary isn't scolding Eve. She isn't trying to take the apple from her, trying to force her to let it go. In fact, Mary doesn't seem to be troubled or worried or bothered at all by Eve's posture. Instead, she's comforting Eve with one hand, a hand on Eve's cheek. No scolding, no yelling, because Mary knows something. Mary knows, looking at Eve, that she's carrying all this weight in her body. She's carrying the shame and pain of her decisions, also carrying the heart-wrenching pain of losing a child. She's carrying it all in her body, in her posture. But again, Mary knows something. Mary is carrying something in her body as well. This is what Laura Jean says. Mary is a co-conspirator in this redemption plot, and she has said a holy yes to it. Mary knows that Eve has broken something very beautiful, but Mary is not worried. Mary feels redemption in her body the same way that Eve feels shame in hers. Mary knows that it's going to be made not only okay, but right. Put your hand here, sister. You're carrying shame in your body, Eve, but I am carrying salvation in mine. Oh, I love that. Mary's not harsh with Eve, but simply prompts her, leads her to touch and feel the salvation, redemption of Jesus growing inside of her. I love that. You know, William Langland in the 14th century said this, "All the wickedness in the world that man might work or think is no more to the mercy of God than a live coal dropped into the sea." Mary's not anxious. She's not concerned or worried about Eve's posture because she knows what's growing inside of her is the mercy and grace of God. And it's so much bigger and more vast than anything Mary could have done, anything you or I could do. Despite the fact that we carry this with us, what Mary seems to know, her secret understanding is this. She knows she grows salvation inside of her and that hope has finally come with her pregnancy. And as Sister Wendy Beckett says, reflecting on this piece, Mary then teaches her, Eve, the first act in this Christian drama. One must let go of his or her pride and shame so as to discover the beating heart of the living God. Mary doesn't offer explanations or arguments. She simply ushers her towards the encounter with God made flesh. And this is what Mary's doing. Go ahead if you need to. Keep clutching that apple. Keep clutching on to your past and mistakes, all that if you need to, Eve. But let me just invite you to divine encounter. And in that, know healing and grace and redemption. And so Mary places Eve's hands on her own body. And this is the last thing that I love about this painting, because you see, while Eve can't even bring herself to make a move towards her own freedom, right? Mary takes Eve's hand for her. Mary doesn't ask or force her to give up what she isn't ready to give up. She simply takes her hand and invites her to touch the salvation of Jesus growing in her belly. And I think that's such a powerful portrait of how Jesus wants to interact with us. Not harsh, not forceful or coercing, just simply an invitation to encounter the divine and know the tender touch of mercy. And I love that we get this sense that Remington almost gives Mary this great awareness, you could say, because it's not just a question of us. You know, the story of Advent, the hope of incarnation, is not just us being willing or able to let go of our own personal shame or confess our own sinfulness. What Mary holds within her is much bigger than that. It's powerful enough to crush the systemic. And I love that Mary doesn't even seem to pay attention to what she's doing, but she's still crushing the head of the serpent, right? I mean, I love this. Take a look. Because you see in the portrait, while Eve is still clutching to her own sin, what we realize is that she's also still being clutched by sin. The snake is wrapped around her leg. Sin is pervasive, systemic. There are cycles of abuse and violence and revenge and power grabbing that undergird our society. Sin is so much bigger than a choice that you or I make, right? Sin is systemic. It's cultural, it's generational, it's far deeper than simply the choices you or I make. Mary knows, right, that Eve is trapped in something bigger than her own decision-making, bigger than herself. Yes, she's holding the apple, still clutching the apple, but the serpent is also still wrapped around her leg. It's not ready to let go of Eve. And so Eve couldn't let go even if she tried. Because she's trapped within larger forces than herself. She's trapped within the systemic evil of our world, systemic forces that are still at work today, that still keep us trapped in failure, in shame, in pain. And it's like Mary, without even a hesitation, without even a second thought, right? Like her foot just comes stamping down on the head of the serpent. Like if you think, it's almost like Mary's communicating to us, if you think this is just about, if you think incarnation and Jesus coming is just about personal salvation, you're not thinking big enough. Jesus has come to bring us the tender touch of grace, yes, but Jesus has also come to stamp out the systemic forces of evil in our world. And I love that Mary just crushes it. The hope of incarnation, the hope we have because of Christmas, is not just some personal liberation self-help project. That's but a band-aid solution in our world. What we need from God is the personal touch of grace and tenderness, yes, but we also need redemption and grace from where real evil lies, and that is in the systemic, the serpentine systemic forces of our world. And that's what Mary crushes here under her foot, you could say. The serpentine systemic forces of racism, sexism, greed, jealousy, lust for power, and violence. That is the hope of incarnation. And you know, I think this is why I love this piece so much, because I see myself in Eve. I know her here because I have seen her in the mirror. She is me. Clutching to my mistakes and my wounds, unable or unwilling to let go, Eve is me. Still wrapped in the systemic sins of our world, things that clutch us from beyond, things like greed, racism, sexism, lust, anger, jealousy, spite, violence. We're still trapped in those things. And I love this picture so much because I know I am Eve as well. but I want to learn to be Mary as well, because God's question for her was simply, will you participate? Will you allow me, Mary, to grow the divine within you? Will you allow me, Mary, to grow the hope and light and salvation of the world within you? And Mary's answer is yes. And she birthed Jesus, who offers the tender touch of grace and mercy to everyone who has messed up, made mistakes, people who are living in shame, people who are living with the great pain of loss. But she also birthed Jesus, the one through his life, death, resurrection, of course, promises to stamp the head of systemic serpentine forces in our world that oppress and diminish. But all Mary had to do was say yes. I think it's the same question for us. Are we willing to participate with what God is up to in this world? Are we willing to participate with God in hope and bringing light to this world? Are we willing to participate with God in working against the systemic forces in our world that only do harm and no good? As Laura Jean says, Advent is Eve holding her sin. Advent is Mary comforting her anyway. Advent is Eve holding her sin, her pain. And like Eve here, so many of us, we hold on and clutch to all that has hurt or harmed us, all that we've done, we can't seem to let go. And like Eve, our hand needs to be guided to the divine touch of healing, to the touch of redemption that Mary offers here. But while Advent is Eve holding her sin, Advent is Mary comforting her anyway. This Advent season, may you know that hope, may you know that comfort. Be it in your pain, the thing you've lost, be it in that thing you can't quite let go of, may you find and know this Advent season the comfort of the Divine One who has come to offer us hope and grace and freedom from all that holds us in chains.